Hi, I'm Meredith.
And I'm Katie.
And you're listening to I'm Not Scared, You're Scared,
a horror movie podcast.
If you're a fan of the show, please like and follow us on iTunes and Spotify and review us. It'll help spread the word.
Also, you can follow us on Instagram at I'm Not Scared, You're Scared, or email us at I'm Not Scared, You're Scared at gmail.com.
Thanks for joining us. We are here to talk
record over the previous stuff.
I guess my man did that. I don't know. I trust him, though.
My man.
Okay, so we're here to talk about The Others.
The Others.
Released in 2001, my graduation year from high school.
Oh.
Yes, I'm that old.
Hey, I'm 2000, baby. We were all pretty stoked to be the class of the millennium.
You guys made it through the Y2K.
Yeah. It was just really puzzling because at our high school, like when we would have, you know, the pep rallies and whatnot, like that when they would cheer for individual classes, they'd be like 98, 98, 90, 90, 98. And then it got to us and we were like, we don't know what to say. It doesn't work with double zeros.
Zero, zero.
Zero, 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 zero. This sucks.
I know. Speaking of age.
Ah, yes. Meredith, what is new with you, particularly regarding the topic of aging?
I got older.
Oh, that's a bitch.
When was my birthday? I don't remember.
2 days ago?
Yeah. It's 2 days ago. Yeah. I don't know what time is because I, unlike you, sorry, had a week off from school.
Yes.
So I was going to say, speaking of age, we went to Vegas and it had a sign on there. If you were born before, you have to be born after this date in 2004. To be able to gamble. And I was like, 2004. Oh my God. I'm so old. But I don't know. We went and I saw a lot of fun shows. We saw Dita Von Teese, her burlesque, which is like amazing. It was really cool costumes and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then we went and saw Cirque du Soleil Ka. And that was fantastic. Like the stage moved and went completely vertical.
Oh, wow.
And it was insane.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're like, see stuff and you're like, oh my God, this is like feats of what people can do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know what to say. You're like, I hope everyone makes it to the show.
I just hope both sides have fun.
I hope everyone has fun. Yeah, so then we also had a little, we came back from Vegas. Some of my WoW friends came out too. And then Victor's, my mother-in-law, so his mom came out with her friend because it's her birthday next week.
Mm-hmm.
And we all kind of celebrated, had dinners. Sometimes we hung out and then sometimes they're like, we're going to do our own thing. It was just very like laid back. No expectations or, you know, it was just very kind of organic how we all kind of got together. And it was nice to have that. Because nothing I love more than having a set itinerary with expectations on a week I want to relax.
Yeah,
that's about it. And because we were gambling and we went to go see the Dita Von Teese show and there's a lot of like Art Deco stuff. And I was like, this makes me think of the show Boardwalk Empire. Mm-hmm. And Victor had never seen it before. So
really? Oh, yeah. I love that show.
It's so amazing. It's so good.
So well done.
So we've started watching it, kind of binging it, and we are nearly finished with the first season. And it holds up. It does.
Yeah. And I felt at the time, and then I've rewatched it once since it was originally aired. The last season, you know, it lost. It always does. Like a show always loses something in the last season.
Yeah.
So like when it started, when they brought Florida into the storyline, and I was that like the rum smuggling up from Cuba and all of that. I was like, no.
Yeah.
But like the
Arquette
first
was in there. Was she in?
Yeah. Patricia Arquette.
I kind of forgot. I disassociated and cause like, I don't know.
Yeah. It just wasn't as strong because the beginning was so incredible.
Yeah.
Michael Shannon in that.
I love him. Oh, he's so crazy. Good.
He's so perfect.
He's such like a shoot from the hip actor. And so like he takes these roles that are just so random and, he's this like crazy death stare and you're like, oh my God, I'm going to turn into flames from him, like, staring into the camera, like, with his crazy eye. I call him his crazy eyes.
Yeah. Well, and so it's great. Impressive to be called the crazy eyes when you're in a show that's spearheaded by Steve Buscemi.
I know.
And you're the one with the crazy eyes.
I know. But it's just, like, every scene, I'm like, that guy's amazing. That guy's amazing. Yeah, Michael that lady's Pitt's amazing.
Yeah.
They're all amazing. Mm-hmm. I love this show so much. So I'm glad he was like, yeah, we should watch it. And I'm like, oh, yes. It's like something when you get to share something you love.
Yeah.
And I kind of always talk about like The Sopranos more because that's an amazing show.
Yeah.
But then this one is a close.
Yeah, this had more opportunity to be like visually artistic. Like they both have, you know, obviously great performers and great storylines and complexity, but with The Sopranos being set in modern day, like you don't have the opportunity to show like all of those other elements of creativity with like the costuming and the architecture and all of that.
It was funny because in one of the scenes, Chalky White, who I love him. Well, he's R.I.P. He was amazing. But he calls Nucky a motherfucker. Mm-hmm. And he goes, what does that mean?
Like, he's never heard the term before.
Yeah, and I'm like, oh my God, he's sweet baby angels, but also they're murderers. So it's like, they're not. It's just, it was like a new revolution of things happening and bootleggers and... It's fun. So I'm glad to watch that. But what is new with you? You get to work.
Like a loser. No, we don't get ski week. We come back from Christmas vacation and we're looking down the barrel of 15 straight weeks of instruction before we get to spring break. So it's
my face is just a grimace.
Yeah. We're down to 8 now. I have a little countdown in my classroom. We have 8 remaining weeks. So that means that we've been, you know, 7 straight since Christmas. Mm-hmm. So no vacation frivolity to share on my end. In terms of
no burlesque shows.
I mean, on the topic of rewatching great projects, Tom and I have gone back to, and this is all, it's very recent, as The Offer with Miles Teller, which was a limited series about the production of The Godfather.
Oh, okay.
And
he was in Whiplash, right?
Yes. Yeah. And Top Gun 2. And yeah, he's, he was just kind of, I feel like, one of those go-to boy toy characters. Like when he was younger, he was in a lot of just like, you know, boy movies. Like,
he has like a nice face where he's like, seems like he could just be, you know, like the term boy next door, kind of just like, not like a Brad Pitt, but just like, oh, he's handsome and he's a, you know, seems like he's funny and can carry or serious and can carry a movie.
Yeah. And I feel like he, you know, he definitely grew into like, you know, he found opportunities to show that he was actually a very talented actor. Mm-hmm. But I had only ever seen him in those just kind of like fluff movies.
Mm-hmm. Whiplash was pretty intense, though.
Yeah, I haven't seen that.
Oh, highly recommend.
That's the drummer one?
Yeah.
Yeah. With J.K. Simmons.
There's a reason J.K. Simmons got a award for that because it's so brutal. It's really good. So.
But yeah, The Offer is just, it's so cool, especially if you love The Godfather, which we love The Godfather, and if you know it well and have seen it many times, then to, you know, get on the other side of the story and the process and what it was like putting it together and how, like, you always talk about like how fascinating it is to see like why one person got cast instead of someone else and how that changed the course of everything.
Yeah.
You know, and the you know, the people that didn't want Pacino for the role and the people that didn't want Brando in the film and the, you know, the people that fought to have the cast be
and how
what
different
it was.
It would be.
Yeah, exactly. And the reason that it's the movie is legendary and like one of the best films of all time, like every little thing that went into it and some of the things being just completely random.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's really well done. I can't remember if it was an Apple TV project or no, it's on Paramount Plus right now. So I don't know what that means in terms of who produced it, if Paramount Plus produced it. Mm-hmm. But it's just a really amazing limited series. It's like 10 episodes or something. So we got back into that because there's a bunch of shows we're always like, we should go back and rewatch that. Like Sopranos is one, Boardwalk Empire is one.
Yeah.
But this is when we're like, yeah, let's put that bad boy back on. And like I said, it's not even that old. It came out just a couple of years ago.
I would watch it for sure.
But yeah, it's a really good one.
He's one of the, well, John Cazale, I think, or I might be butchering his name. I watched a documentary, about him, and he was in The Godfather and Deer Cazale, Hunter.
Yeah.
All of those.
Those were the only three films he ever made. Mm-hmm. That and Dog Day Afternoon.
Yeah. And he kind of seemed like a Buscemi kind of guy, a little bit and eccentric looking, very talented, and unfortunately he died far too soon. But I always love his projects because they're so limited, but also the cast around him. Like when he did Deer Hunter, he was very ill, and they didn't want him to do it because they're like, well, when you are filming, putting all this money into a project, and a person is maybe not going to last through filming, it's a huge
risk.
Yeah, a huge risk. And I want to say, Pacino or somebody, or maybe, I can't remember,
Pacino
De Niro.
Was an endearing.
No, De Niro then. Yeah. And it was like, he put up the money.
Yeah.
He staked it.
Yeah.
To be like, he needs to be in this movie. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I love those movies and going back and revisiting. So I probably would be definitely interested in watching that because I love that kind of background stuff about, how movies get made or how, who was almost cast and you're like, oh God.
Yeah. You like can't imagine, hot garbage.
Yeah. You're like, throw that into the trash. We don't need, I mean, we love Gene Hackman, but he does not need to be Hannibal Lecter. Okay.
No, that would have been a very different film.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And then the other, in terms of my viewing habits, since that's all I have to talk about right now, is my son, who, is going to be, is 18 soon, movies, any opportunity that we still have to let's watch a movie, let's do something, mm-hmm. And he, Gladiator 2 has come out and, we're curious to see it. We haven't watched it yet. And he was like, seeing the commercials for that and was like, oh, I really want to see that. And we're like, have you seen the original? And we'd never shown him the original. And so we watched Gladiator with Russell Crowe with my son at some point last week or something. And it was just like, it was wild to go back. Like it holds up, and I'd seen it. I haven't seen it in years, but I had seen it several times. Talking about people potentially or in fact dying during filming, the actor that died in the filming of Godfather because he was an alcoholic and he had sworn to Ridley Scott that he would not drink during the filming, but then he went out during filming to a bar and got in a drinking contest and died.
Did you hate it when you do that?
I know. And they were so far into filming that they were like, we can't recast him and start over or whatever. And so when I was reading the article about it, it said, that they just used CGI to put his face on another actor. And it's like hard to imagine, in like the late 90s when this was being made, CGI being convincing enough to pull that off.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And then the other thing, knowing that Hans Zimmer has done, the scores for so many really, really well-known and famous movies. Mm-hmm. When you rewatching Gladiator now, possibly for the first time since all the Pirates of the Caribbean movies were made and you're listening to the score.
I only watched the Gladiator for the first time last year.
Yeah. The score is, it's like you're listening to Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah.
It's, you really didn't even try to vary. Yeah. You just keep expecting.
I'm like, oh no, what?
Where are the skeleton pirates?
Hard teammates.
Yeah.
No, Victor made me watch it while we were on our honeymoon because we were about to go to the Colosseum and I'd never seen the movie.
Okay.
He's like, are you freaking serious? You've never seen it? I was like, no.
I don't know if you know this about me, but that movie's not really my typical style.
So he made me watch the whole movie on his phone and he held the phone up. So
oh my God. That's hilarious.
Because we're in a foreign country. It's not like we just had Netflix or whatever. We can't just turn it on. So He made me watch it so we could go to the Coliseum like 2 days later and I could be like, oh,
it's very
like
important. The movie. It's very important.
I know.
Yeah. He also could have made you watch the most recent Godzilla movie where Godzilla uses the Coliseum as his little nest to sleep in.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Make, really makes you think.
Yeah, sure. History, am I right?
History.
Okay. All right. We'll get into this movie.
Yeah, it's a 5 pages.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because I felt like, again, the detail kind of was where details were important in this, kind of because things were hinting at things, you know, foreshadowing, yada, yada, yada. Anyway, so it, in case we've forgotten what we're here for, the others, it opens with Nicole Kidman narrating the creation of the Earth and mankind. And while we're watching a lot of kind of turn of the century illustrations of a of children in the home, the house in the kind of in the moors, that kind of spooky, ooky, spooky place.
Yeah, that's what I was asking if we had done Woman in Black before, because I'd forgotten we have, because the setting is so similar.
Yeah, this is in the Channel Island of Jersey. You know, Jersey.
Jersey. It's just like The Sopranos.
Just like The Sopranos. Yeah, so the setting is amazing, of course, and creepy and weird. So then now we have a screaming in terror Grace, who's played by Nicole Kidman, waking up in her bed. She realizes the late hour and she gets out of bed and gets up to, you know, get the day started. Some new workers just kind of arrive, start walking up to the front of their very large estate. They introduce themselves as Mr. Tuttle, Mrs. Mills, and Lydia. And Lydia is a younger, she's an adult, so they keep calling her the girl, but she's an adult woman. But she's also a mute and doesn't speak. She tells Mrs. Mills, Grace tells Mrs. Mills and Lydia that they can stop sleep at the top of the stairs. And Mr. Tuttle, you may sleep in the shed around back.
Lucky
and
Mr. Tuttle. Mr. Tuttle. I'm sure a shed in the misty Channel Island moors is a pleasant place to sleep.
Sure, it's not damp at all.
Not remotely damp.
So Grace mentions, you know, the servants up and left in the, you know, last in the week prior, kind of in the night, and they didn't even collect their wages.
Sons of bitches. Don't you hate it when your servants do that?
Yeah. She's like, they didn't even, they just left then and no wages. And then I had to keep their money.
Oh,
what
boo-hoo.
Am I going to do? So the new servants asked, you know, where's the master? Grace tells them that he went away to the war about a year and a half ago and she has no news of him. And this is World War II times. So they, I'm thinking, is it World War II?
I don't remember, honestly, if it's 2 or 1, but I can find that out as you continue.
Okay. I want to say it's 2. So, yeah, I'm pretty sure. So she mentions, you know, that he went away and has no news of her husband. She mentioned that the home is like a ship as she's kind of guiding them around, telling them what's about their home. And every door must be shut, closed, and locked. Mrs. Mills starts to tell Grace, you know, they don't need a tour. It's fine. But Grace's insistence, because they need to be able to traverse the home in the dark safely. Mm-hmm. And there's a reason why she introduces Lydia and Mrs. Mills to their very, very pale children in their little 90s. And she says, you know, the curtains must remain closed. They can't be exposed to light. The children are Anne and Nicholas. And Grace tells them that they're very allergic to prolonged exposure to the light and it could be fatal to them. Mm-hmm. Then over breakfast, Anne mentions that the other servants had left and they promised them that they wouldn't leave before, too, when Anne was like, they promised they wouldn't leave, but they left anyway. Mm-hmm. So are you going to go? Are you going to leave us? And Mrs. Mills says, you know, we're here to stay. Don't worry. And she said, and their mommy went mad. Nicholas says, hey, you need to be quiet.
Yeah, he doesn't want her to talk about it.
He's very persistent. He doesn't like talking about this subject. And Anne is very stubborn. She's like,
she's
well,
a little bit of a
well,
brat.
She did. So Grace shows up mid-conversation and she asks Mrs. Mills to speak with her and that she wondered how the servants knew that there was work at the house after she found the letter that was advertising for openings that was never picked up by the postman and was never put in the newspaper. So how could they know about the open positions? Mrs. Mills explained that they were coming by on the off chance that there was work and that they had worked at the home before and it was the best years of her life. She was like, I was going to say, but you kind of
cut me off
and started saying I could go live in the shed or whatever.
So. With your lovely offer.
Yeah. Okay. So she said, it was the best years of my life. I worked in this home before. She basically is like, can we please stay? And Grace says, okay, fine, you can stay. At this point, she also mentions that our children have strange ideas sometimes and Mrs. Mills shouldn't pay attention to them. Anne likes to talk about ghosts and things like that.
Yeah.
So Mrs. Mills returns to the children and, as they're eating their breakfast, Anne says, well, it did happen. And they're, I put in parentheses, their mommy lost it. Later, Grace and the children are reading the Bible and they have a discussion about lying to save their necks from the Romans. And Grace quizzes them about hell and purgatory and limbo. And she says, you have to study all day. And she separates them and they protest. They don't want to be separated. And they're like, what if we see a ghost? And Grace is like, well, you'll say hello to the ghost and you'll just keep on with your studies. We don't have time for that crap. And she's like, Nicholas, you have to be okay being alone sometimes. You can't be around us.
Stop being such a clingy little bastard.
I know. He's like, no, mommy. And then Anne's like, mommy, mommy. You know, like she's
like every good big sister.
She's really nice to her little brother. Grace gives Nicholas that pep talk. She says, if you're afraid, just hold on to your rosary. You will be fine. Later, Grace chats with Mrs. Mills, and she asks if Mrs. Mills had had any children. She tells Grace that she has Mr. Tuttle and the girl. That's all the family that she really needs. Grace asks if Lydia was born a mute, but Mrs. Mills quickly says no and then leaves the conversation swiftly. Grace hears some crying in another part of the house, and she assumes it's Nicholas because he was being a whiny little baby earlier. But it isn't, because she goes where he's studying and he's just, contentedly reading. And she's like, were you crying? And he's like, no, I mean, I'm fine. Don't worry about me. So she hears it again and she goes and assumes it's Anne, but it isn't her either. Anne insists after some more prodding and questioning that it's probably that other boy. It's the other boy. His name is Victor, and he's a spoiled brat. And his father is a pianist, and Victor told her that they will have to leave. And she also says that Victor doesn't like the house, and they are currently viewing the house. And during their exchange, Grace realizes that the door is wide open, and it's much to her shock, because it's like it was closed, and then it was wide open again. Grace lays into the new servants and tells them, they must close the doors and lock them, because she assumes it's them that made the mistake.
Because it couldn't be her.
No. They're insistent that it was not them, but Grace is just very like, she doesn't believe them. She thinks
Well, servants lie. Everybody knows that.
Well, they ran off in the night, the other one, so. Later that night, over dinner, Anne is a jerk to Lydia about her being mute. And she also tells Nicholas that what she said about Victor is true. Nicholas doesn't believe her. But she's pretty insistent. Like, there's people in this house.
Yeah.
And Nicholas is like, stop it. You're scaring me. Later,
I mean, he's kind of justified in, thinking that she's this big sister of his who's kind of a bitch to him. just trying to scare him.
He's like, you're always trying to trick me. So later in the evening, Anne wakes up Nicholas because the curtains are very much open. And they are usually not. They're very heavy curtains that will keep out the light. But Anne said, it's Victor that open them and don't be an idiot because Nicholas is like, why'd you open the curtains? And Anne's like, psh, I didn't do that crap. It's that Victor kit. And then she asks Victor to touch Nicholas's cheek. She's like, prove you're here.
He doesn't believe.
And he doesn't believe. And Nicholas is like, stop putting on that voice. Because there's an exchange, like a heated whispering exchange of some unknown person in the room. There was some, they're both threatening to get their parents, Anne and Victor. They're both like, I'm going to get my parents. Like, well, I'm going to go get my parents. And it all ends with a terrified Nicholas screaming once his face is touched and pissing off royally pissing Grace off.
Yeah.
Being like, what the fuck are you doing? you know, doing this to your little brother. You're like terrifying him for fun. Like, yeah. what
you the sadist?
Hell? Yeah. So she punishes Anne for days, making her read from passages from the Bible to repent and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And Anne's very stubborn and she's like, it wasn't me. And she's like, yeah, that's bullshit. Yeah. So then Grace and Mrs. Mills later have an exchange about Anne and her punishment. And Grace mentions that the priest hasn't come by in a while. And that they can't obviously go to him because the children can't leave the house. Mm-hmm. Then she asks Mrs. Mills to check all the upstairs because there's like running back and forth. And she assumes it's Lydia. You know, she's like, God, Lydia's been just doing this all day. She's just running back and forth. Mm-hmm. And Mrs. Mills is a little bit like, okay, I'll tell her to stop. And then at this point, Grace looks out the window and sees Mrs. Mills and Lydia. Having an exchange where they both look puzzled. They're like, and then they look up to the window above. And suddenly there's more running. Who is upstairs is the question. So then Grace starts climbing the stairs to investigate. Anne tells Grace, who's sitting on the steps reading, that she doesn't know what to tell her because Grace is like, who is that? What's that? What's going on? She's like, well, I don't know what to tell you because I always tell you I'm telling you the truth and I'm getting punished. I'm getting punished for it. And Anne at this point points out light in the other room and Grace goes inside to investigate. There's a lot of furniture. And at this point, it's like, it's very dark where Anne is because she can't be exposed to light, but it's daytime outside. But it's also like a foggy, misty, gloomy day. So she goes into this room and there are a lot of pieces of furniture and statues and there's sheets on everything. Because imagine like Victorian house covered in a whole room with a whole bunch of shit in there.
Why wouldn't you have a room full of things about the height of an adult human draped in sheets that you have to dramatically yank down one by one?
Yeah. So she goes in there to investigate and she, you know, starts pulling. She hears like voices and some shushing, like shh, shh, and like whisperings and stuff. And she starts pulling sheets off and being like, show yourself. What the hell is going on? And this is like, let me mention, this is a really massive home.
Oh, yeah.
So if someone was hiding, it could be easily done in a room that nobody uses, you know, so it's not out of the realm of possibilities.
Yeah.
So at this point, you know, the door then opens and she pursues the voices, doors open and slam, and tells Grace that they, you know, they told her the house is theirs and they're going to take down all of the curtains too. Grace asks the servants about it and she's kind of freaking out and that there are people in the home with them. And at this point shows her a drawing that she made of a mom and a dad and their son Victor and an old woman. There are numbers next to the drawings, which is the number of times she's seen these people. Mm-hmm. And she's seen the old woman a lot and she's creepy and she likes to ask Anne questions. And at this point, Grace has the servants look around the house and open all of the curtains, looking for any signs of life or somebody hiding.
Yeah.
There's also, I should mention, there was a war going on. They're close to Europe. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not out of the realm of possibilities that an intruder could be staying there. So she's freaking out. But then also it's like the island was invaded. People were showing up. This is not, you know, absolute paranoia on her.
Yeah,
on
her, well, and it end kind of supports that because obviously she doesn't want to believe that something supernatural is happening. The fact that there is some approaching reasonable possibility that it's real living people doing these things, like, you're going to cling to that.
Right. Yeah. So meanwhile, Mrs. Mills is sitting with Anne and Nicholas, and Anne tells Nicholas that ghosts wear sheets and say, ooh.
Yeah, and carry chains. Yeah.
And carry chains. And she doesn't believe everything in the Bible. So that was a fun little exchange. Meanwhile, Grace is looking at old photos from the home. They just have all these, they moved in basically in those times, and they're just stuff left from former owners. Mm-hmm. And so not all of the things that are in the home belonged to Grace and their family. Mm-hmm. So she's going through, you know, boxes of photos and portraits and things like that. And she finds a book of dead the dead portraits. Or, mm-hmm. well, we don't really know, but I know. It was all the people who are sitting for the photos mm-hmm. appear to be sleeping. And she asks Mrs. Mills about it, and she tells Grace it was the hope that it would capture their souls in the photographs. Yeah. And that way they would continue to keep, not like living, but, you know, like they make their mark, I guess, on the world. Mm-hmm. And she tells, you know, she's like, Grace is not happy about it. She said, please, you know, get rid of this. I don't want this in the house. That's very morbid. And I don't like this.
There's some other horror movie that has that as a plot element, the dead photos, but I can't remember which one it is. I wonder if it's mm-hmm. Woman in Black, because it would have to be like a period piece, like, yeah. I don't know.
They're definitely creepy, and I've looked them up online. Like, is this a real thing? Like, how mm-hmm. many years ago when I looked it up, and I'm like, oh, these exist. That's crazy. So, but, you know, it was also like a fact of life. Like, yes. Everyone was dying all the time. Mm-hmm. So, not that it's not now. Anyway, let me go back. Later in the evening, Grace sits by the fire and invites Mrs. Mills to come sit with her. She asks Mrs. Mills if she was a nanny before, and she says, no, but I was in charge of a large staff of 15. But eventually there's only the three of them, and they had to leave on account of the tuberculosis. And then she asks more about Lydia at this point, and Grace asks more about mm-hmm. Lydia, and asks her, you know, what caused her to stop talking. And Mrs. Mills says, I don't really know yeah. what made her stop talking. So then Grace goes at this point to ask, goes to Anne, and as she's sleeping, she asks, you know, will you please forgive me? You know, she feels a lot of remorse for yeah. being so harsh on Anne, but honestly, Anne is kind of a little jerk, so.
Yeah, she's a pain in the ass.
I'm like, she kind of deserved it. Anyway, Nicholas wakes and asks, you know, when's Dad coming home? And she tells him, you know, when the war is over. So, of course, at this point, she is very sad and crying and feels very much alone. Grace just feels very, like, where's my husband? I don't think he's ever coming back. Yeah. And because she hasn't heard from him at all. You know, so then at this point, she hears some music being played expertly on the piano. And she goes to investigate, and she has her, like, is it a gas lamp? Like, that she's carrying?
An oil lamp?
Her oil lamp, yes. Oil lamp. And she's walking in there, and it's very creepy and dark. Mm-hmm. And she approaches and opens the door of the music room. No one's there. And she has her gun there with her. Because she's very much in the mindset that someone who's not, yeah. you know, doesn't belong there, who's in her home. She shuts and locks the piano. And then she goes to shut the piano room door and is quietly contemplating the door and looking at it. And suddenly it's like almost shut, and she's like kind of looking at it, and suddenly it slams shut in her face mm-hmm. and knocks her down. It's a very like tense scene, because yeah. it's like she's staring at it in silence, and then suddenly slam, and she's like knocked on her ass. So then she opens the door, and the piano is now open again. Grace calls for help. She's like, Mrs. Mills, you know, some crazy crap's happening. And then Mrs. Mills is like, here's some pills to help you with your headaches. Grace tells Mrs. Mills that someone else is in the room. Someone was in the room with her. And Mrs. Mills tells Grace she does believe her, and that the dead do sometimes get mixed up with the living. Mm-hmm. She's like, I think something is going on.
Yeah.
And at this point, Grace is sort of on a mission to figure out what's going on. She's going to see the father. This is the next morning. Mm-hmm. She's like, I'm going to go. I haven't seen the father. He hasn't come to visit me, but I'm going to go and see what the hell's going on.
What do we always do when things get spooky? We run straight to the priest.
And so she takes off, and she has a massive, huge estate, mm-hmm. obviously. So she's like, I'm going to be walking for a while to go walk to town. And at this point, Mrs. Mills is outside, and she asks Grace is outside. She asks Mr. Tuttle, find the graves of the family and look for a son named Victor. And Grace has, you know, taken off down the driveway. Mrs. Mills tells Mr. Tuttle that Grace, you know, thinks the house is haunted now. Mr. Tuttle asks, you know, if it's safe to let Grace go. And Mrs. Mills tells him, well, the fog won't let her out. You know, mm-hmm. you know, and they're like, the fog.
Oh, yes, the fog.
Then you know, he asks when it will be the right time to let it all out in the open. Mm-hmm. And Mrs. Mill says, all in good time.
Mr. Tuttle.
And she's like, oh, no, you know, put more dead leaves on that gravestone. And you're like, that's not weird.
Hiding a gravestone is totally normal behavior.
Yeah. So Grace is walking and walking in the fog. She can't find her way. It's very thick. And she hears...
spin dramatically in circles perfectly coiffed 40s hair flips on my shoulders.
I don't know where I am. And suddenly she hears walking towards her. And it's her husband, Charles, back from the war.
Ah, oh, Christopher Eccleston.
I love him.
Yeah.
And 28 days later, he was crazy. So she says, you know, I'd given up on seeing you ever again. And she's like, where were you this whole time? And he's like, I was out there and I was looking for my home.
Yeah.
And then he goes, sometimes I bleed. And she's like, well,
me too.
Okay, let me give you a big warm embrace. Let's go home.
Okay. Yeah. And he's so like bewildered. He's like out of it.
He seems like he doesn't know anything.
Yeah.
Or where he is.
He's just in a fog. It literally makes, and figuratively.
Yeah. It reminded me of when people come back in Pet Sematary at first.
Yeah.
Very just like confused. Oh, okay. I guess we're going to go here now and I'm going to sit and I'm going to look around and be confused. So, two of them return home and Mrs. Mills is a little bit weird about his return. She's like, what does this mean? And he goes to say,
she's like, get more leaves.
Get more leaves. He goes to tell the children hello. They all embrace. And he's pretty normal with the children. He's like, hey, kids, you know, and they're like, oh, dad. And it's a nice family reunion. Grace tries to ask her husband to come down for lunch, but he will not leave his bed. And at lunch, Anne asks where the soldiers go if they die in the war. And Grace tells her that it depends on who they fought for, the goodies or the baddies. Anne asks about the intruders again. And Grace is like, well, there aren't any intruders. And she's like, there were. And, you know, because Anne's very stubborn. Mm-hmm. And Anne is mad because Grace, you know, doesn't believe her anymore because it's like, I'm sorry, you're right. I think something is going on. And she's like, oh, no, that didn't happen.
Full on denial. Now dad's home. We're going to pretend everything is perfect.
Yeah, she's fine. And then Anne's like argumentative. And then Anne's like, why are you saying this? And Grace is like, go to your room. Get out of here. So Mrs. Mills tells her as she's, you know, running away sobbing. She kind of catches her in the hall and Mrs. Mills said there's gonna be some changes. And Grace, your mom will have to believe you. And that's it. So then later, Mrs. Mills and Mr. Tuttle discussed the situation. Mrs. Mills mentioned that Grace is acting as though nothing has happened and the children should be a little bit easier to convince. And Mr. Tuttle's like, what about the husband? And she's like, well, he doesn't even know where he is. Yeah. So then the next day, Anne's wearing her communion dress that Grace has made for her, and she's adding some finishing touches and begs Grace to let her wear it a little bit longer. So she's playing for a bit, and meanwhile Grace goes to try to convince her husband, you know, get out of bed, eat something. He just seems like he's in a deep depression.
Yeah, where she like him coming home, she was like, everything's gonna go back to normal, but he's not playing along.
No, yeah, he's like taken to his bed. So he's, after being unsuccessful, she goes to tell Anne, you know, you need to take off your communion dress, you know, you can't get it dirty. And she comes to find Anne just playing on the floor with her marionette doll, and her hand is suddenly she realizes the hand is very old, but the voice is her daughter's, and it's, she like kind of faces her and it's the old woman's face, and she was horrified, asking, you know, where's my daughter? And the old woman starts to laugh, and it's like she has like a veil on too because it's a communion dress, and she's like, oh, are you mad? I am your daughter. And she's like, the hell you are. She starts like attacking her and shaking her, and I think she even rips the dress, and Anne is suddenly very upset because like her mom just smacked her around for no reason.
Yeah.
Mrs. Mills tells Grace, you know, she can't take on the responsibility of the house and offers her more migraine pills because like Grace is losing it. And Grace is like, who do you think you are?
Yeah.
You know, like, I am in charge of this home and you're the servant and you should not be telling me what
you're
to do.
And you're not my apothecary.
Right. And she's like, please leave me alone. and quit trying to dole out advice when I didn't ask you for any, basically. So later in Grace and Charles talk, and Anne has spent some time with Charles at this point. After the she like slapped Anne around, she's like, I have to go talk to my dad. Mm-hmm. So Grace says that she thought that someone was in the house. And, you know, she tells her husband, Charles, this. And he tells her that, you know, that's not what I'm talking about. Because he's like, what's going on? She's like, well, I thought someone was in the house. I got really upset. And he's like, that's not what I'm referring to. Mm-hmm. I'm referring to what happened that day. And she's like, I don't know what happened that day. And he's like, yeah, you do. And, you know, the servants had left that night. You know, and she was very stressed out and upset. And can you ever forgive me? And I think they hook up. So in the children's room, Anne's very upset because her mother was awful to her. And tells Nicholas that Grace had hit her and that she went mad just like that day. Mm-hmm. And then we return to Grace and Charles. They're having their altercation. They haven't hooked up yet. She's upset with him for leaving. You know, she's like, it was not our war to fight. And you decided you need to go be part of it. You left your family. You left me. I've been all alone here dealing with your crazy ass kids who can't go in the sun. He tells her, you know, I have to leave again.
And she's like, excuse me?
You just got back. What the hell? And you've been in your bed the whole time. I don't know. And then the two of them hook up. I don't know why. And then the next day he's gone. So he sucks.
Well, he just came back for a little piece of tail.
Yeah. And to be like, hey, kids. Anyway, bye. So the following morning, the children wake to see the curtains are gone.
Yeah. Not just open, but gone.
And Anne starts screaming. And Grace covers the children and because she runs in there here and hears them in distress. And she covers them and tries to get them in a dark room. But all of the curtains are gone throughout the house. And Grace is screaming for Mrs. Mills to help. And she tries to get, you know, Lydia to tell her what happened. She's like, what's going on? And Lydia obviously can't speak at all. And frantically, Grace is asking for help with the curtains. And Mrs. Mills and Mr. Tuttle are just very relaxed about it. They're like, oh, I think it's nice to let the little light in. Yeah. And she's like, are you freaking kidding? The kids will die. You know, they can't be, you know, in a room with light. And Mrs. Mills is like, well, that was before. And so Grace gets her shotgun and she's like, give me your keys, Mrs. Mills. You need to get out of here. Yeah. And Mrs. Mills tells Mr. Tuttle to uncover the gravestones because she's kind of done with this.
Yeah, she's like, all right.
The whole charade.
I've been indulging this lady for a while now, but she's becoming a real pain in the ass.
Yeah. She's like, I'm done. So Grace goes on a hunt for the curtains and Anne and Nicholas are put in a room. Because she's like, you need to be down here where there's no light. Well, yeah. I go figure out what's going on.
Well, listen, when you think about it, like a house that big, there's got to be plenty of interior rooms that have no windows.
Yeah.
Like, how hard would it be?
Right. Yeah. So, Grace is on a mission to find out what's going on. But then Anne and Nicholas are like, well, let's go find her dad. Mom said dad left. Mm-hmm. He must be in the woods still.
Yeah.
So let's go find him. So they go to... You know, they shimmy out of the window and, mm-hmm. and go to investigate. Grace eventually goes and to Mrs. Mills and Lydia's headquarters, that little room she let them live in.
She graced them with.
Yeah. And she, you know, goes through their belongings. And at the same time, Anne and Nicholas have stumbled upon some graves. They approach the gravestones and Anne starts to read them as a big reveal. Grace, meanwhile, is finding death portraits of Mrs. Mills, Mr. Tuttle, and Lydia. And at this point, the children realize that they are looking at the gravestones of Mrs. Mills, Mr. Tuttle, and Lydia. Anne tells Nicholas as they, Mr. Tuttle, Mrs. Mills, and Lydia are walking up to them. He's mm-hmm. like, run, run! And he doesn't believe her. He's like, you're always trying to trick me. She's like, they're ghosts. And he's like, no, they don't have chains. They're not going, ooh. Yeah, they're not saying ooh. And he's like... She's like, I'm sorry about what I said. We gotta get out of here.
I was mistaken.
So eventually he does believe her and they run away back inside the house with Grace. Grace starts shooting at the three of them and Mrs. Mills is like, that won't do anything to us. The tuberculosis finished us all off a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And Anne and Nicholas are told to hide and Mrs. Mills tried to tell Grace that they all need to figure out how to live with each other and that the living and the dead are kind of intermingling with mm-hmm. each other. Mrs. Mills tells Grace that the intruders took the curtains down, and they're, and she's like, the intruders are in there with the children right now. Mm-hmm. And so Grace kind of has that realization as well. And the children are hiding in a closet. And Anne asks Nicholas to stop breathing like that, because they're hiding right mm-hmm. now. And Nicholas is like, I'm not breathing like that. She's like, yeah, you are. You're going like that. And suddenly, as they realize it's not them breathing, mm-hmm. the old woman has found the children, making the children just scream in terror because her eyes are, she's a blind,
like milky.
A blind woman. Mm-hmm. And Mrs. Mills tells Grace, oh, the intruders have found them. There's nothing we can do now. You mm-hmm. need to go talk to them, to yeah. the intruders. So at this point, Grace bravely climbs the stairs and walks into a seance that's happening. And the blind woman is there writing, and a man is reading her scribblings, very much like Insidious, mm-hmm. where she was writing and the medium. And Anne goes to whisper in the woman's ear. And the woman asks, is that how she killed you? Is that why you remain in this house? And the children scream, you know, we're not dead, we're not dead. And Grace picks up the papers, and we also see an invisible force picking up the papers as well and tearing the papers apart. Mm-hmm. From the seance's perspective, they're all, you know, seeing the table shaking. They're, you know, things are happening around in the room that's very otherworld that shouldn't be happening. And at the end of the seance, the mother, who's, you know, Victor's mother, mm-hmm. she's like, we got to get the hell out of here. We cannot stay here. And the husband's like, it's not that bad. And she's like, no. We are not living here. The former owners of the home, she murdered her children and then shot herself. And you're expecting us to live here. Mm-hmm. And so that's the great revelation where Grace is hearing what she did. My stomach's making crazy noises. you know, what happened. The husband finally concedes. He's like, okay, fine. You win. We'll leave. Mm-hmm. So then we see Grace realizing what she did, that she killed her children and that she killed herself. And then nothing happened suddenly. It's like she smothered them with pillows. She went mad and she, you know, pulled the trigger. But then she heard Anne and Nicholas playing in the other room, and she felt like she was given another chance to be a good mother. Mm-hmm. And what does it all mean? And where are they? And suddenly Mrs. Mills is there in the home with them. And she tells Grace, Lydia said the exact same thing. And that's the last time she ever spoke. Mm-hmm. So Mrs. Mills offers to make Grace some tea, saying that there's going to be other intruders that may or may not sense them. And then the children asks, they go and embrace Grace at this point. They're all realizing what has happened to them. Mm-hmm. And the children ask if their father had died in the war. And Grace tells them, you know, he did, but she's not sure if he'll return to them. Mm-hmm. And now it's Grace and the children that haunt the home as Victor looks up in the window very suspiciously. And they get into their gate or their car and drive away. The gate is locked and there's a giant for sale sign on the gate. Mm-hmm. And that is the end of The Others. Did you think it was scary?
Yeah, I thought it was not bad in terms of the scary department. Like the things that the criteria that I usually find scary in movies. Obviously, it was a very spooky setting. The time period shift, and then also, you know, a big mysterious house. Mm-hmm. And on top of it being a big mysterious house, it's also a dark house because they have to have all the curtains drawn all the time. And so having that, that's like a very creepy setting. And then, you know, there weren't a lot of, I feel like, scary moments. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously, and this is the one that was like all over all of the trailers when this movie came out, was when Anne is replaced by the old lady.
The medium.
Face and her hand. Like that, you know, when Nicole Kidman like walks into the room and she's looking at Anne's back and then like looks over her shoulder and just gets a glimpse of Anne's hand. And it's like you said, like a old, decrepit, withered old lady hand. And she's like, what the heck? And then, mm-hmm. you know, Anne turns and she sees her face. Like, you know, that scene was scary. And there were, you know, a couple of other moments that were like, I feel like you, like you described, very tense. Mm-hmm. It didn't rely a ton on like jump scares and stuff. Mm-hmm. But there were like creepy scenes.
Yeah.
And then I think, you know, the revelation of the plot of like, initially, like you've got all these people that you make the assumption that they're alive. And then strange things happen. And then you're like, okay, well, the servants know something that Grace doesn't know. And then, you know, they reveal first that, oh, the servants are ghosts, but they don't. But then there's, then you think, oh, that's the reveal. But then there's the other shoe drops that they're ghosts as well. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those where like, and I don't really have a clear recollection of this, but I'm sure that after the first time I watched it, I immediately wanted to go back and see it, like watch it again, like with Sixth Sense. Like once you know the big reveal at the end, like you want to go back and see all of the events and the behaviors with that information, mm-hmm. and have an opportunity to like understand the events like from a different lens.
Right. Yeah.
But that would make me curious, since you're, you know, the queen of telling what's going to happen. Was this predictable to you, this movie?
I saw it in the theater. Yeah. I remember.
I think I did too, actually.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember if I was like, oh, she's dead.
Yeah.
Maybe. But I remember being like, I felt like the servants were definitely in on something, and mm-hmm. maybe they're trying to hide people there.
Okay.
At the home, yeah. too. But I don't remember. It was such a long time ago.
Yeah, it really was.
But I felt like it was very similar to the big reveal in Sixth Sense, where it's like, oh, he's, you know, they're all dead.
He's
oh, my
dead
God.
The whole time.
Oh, my goodness. And he's even working still. He's, yeah. He's post-death still working.
Yeah, like that's a nightmare. That's the scariest part.
He's in limbo.
He still has to work, even though he's dead.
He still has to have a job. I remember being, I don't know if I felt, I don't think I ever got afraid, mm-hmm. but I remember loving the setting so much. Mm-hmm. And just loving the acting, mm-hmm. because Nicole Kidman was fantastic in this role, and just the twist. Yeah. I remember thinking, oh, this is a great ghost story, mm-hmm. and a great haunted house story.
Yeah.
And rarely is it told from the perspective of the haunter, mm-hmm. not usually. It's always the people who are showing up trying to live and exist in a haunted house.
Yeah.
But what do you do when you're like, you got to go, this is my house. And they're like, I'm also the ghost. But yeah, I remember thinking it was fantastic. I loved Mrs. Tuttle. She's in a lot of stuff. She's one of the
Fiona,
islands.
What is her name?
Shoot, that I don't actress? Remember.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's in a lot of, she's one of the most prominent Irish actresses.
Fionnuala Flanagan.
Yeah.
Fionnuala.
She's fantastic, and she's in a lot of great projects, mm-hmm. so I loved her in this role as well. And I don't know, I think that whenever someone's like, oh, I want to watch something sort of scary, maybe show it to the kids, and yeah. I want to watch like a ghost story, I always say watch the others. It's yeah. not too intense. It has some scary moments. There's children in it. It's mm-hmm. not rated. It's not like super violent at all.
Yeah, it's not violent. It's mm-hmm. not gory. It's not adult. It's like, it's a very good, just pure ghost story.
Yeah.
And it's like a medium level of scary, because like, again, going back to, Woman in Black, I felt like Woman in Black to me was much scarier. And so if I were like thinking about showing a movie to a kid, I would definitely pick this one over Woman in Black, just in terms of like the likelihood it would give them nightmares.
Right. Cause, well, I guess Nicole Kidman or Grace shooting her children or smothering her children and then killing herself is a little bit dark, but there was no malevolent force trying to like kill you if you're in
yeah.
the house. It was very much like a domestic
yeah.
dispute situation. I don't know.
Well, and then like the sympathetic characters, because you spend the whole movie viewing Grace and the children as victims, in a sense, victims, like they're being haunted. Mm-hmm. So then when it turns out that they are the ghosts, it's like, well, you're not frightened of them.
Yeah.
Because up until that point, they were, you know, you felt for them, you were afraid for them. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that's why, you know, it was a cool twist to do. And that looking at, oh, you know, when you're being haunted, like from looking at it from a different perspective. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you see that like articulated or worked into scary movies, the idea of like not all ghosts are bad, you know, mm-hmm. that and in this scenario, it's like obviously Grace did go mad and mm-hmm. do a terrible thing. But it's like the other.
She's like, Anne, I'm sick of your shit.
Yeah, right. But it's like, what if the ghosts that are haunting you are just children? Like, yeah. Nicholas, ghost Nicholas. Like, how are you scared of that?
Oh, yeah. He just looks, he already did look like a ghost, honestly.
He did. Poor little guy. He was a cutie.
I know. But you just feel bad. And then the dad showed up and he's like, I don't even know where I am. And you're like, oh, shit. You're probably like in a trench somewhere. Like, yeah. Long gone.
Yeah.
And that was sad.
But it's like it worked. And that was one of the things where you would view it one way. Like, assuming you hadn't already predicted the plot twist, you would view that in one way of like, this is a man coming home from war. He's seen some shit. He has post-traumatic stress. He mm-hmm. is, you know, like traumatized and, you know, may never recover. You're never the same again after you've been through that experience of fighting in a war. Mm-hmm. And so him behaving like that and like taking to his bed and refusing to come out makes sense as a man who's come back from war.
Right.
And so it's not until that's one of the things that then when you go back and see it knowing the plot twist, you view it completely different. Like he just appeared out of the fog mm-hmm. in the woods, you know? Well, he's dazed and like, what? And then sometimes I bleed. Like he's very confused. He doesn't understand, you know, that he's dead. And then maybe like, you know, you could speculate that he came to realize that he was dead, like after he was back in the house and he was like, wait a minute, like, hold up. And then that's why he left again, because he realized he was dead. Or, you know, like, yeah. Who knows? Because then Mrs. Mills says, like, oh, we don't know if he'll be back or not.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, it, you know, the whole, usually the narrative behind, like, hauntings, you know, are that, like, oh, the place that you die, mm-hmm. you know, or there's some sort of emotional connection. And so that's why they're haunting the house that they lived in and the house that they died in. And why Mrs. Mills and Lydia and Mr. Tuttle are back at that house as ghosts, because that's where they died. Mm-hmm. And so maybe that's why he was like, whoa, I've got to go haunt somewhere else because I died on the battlefield, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. I think that the plot devices that made it very the climax and all that of mm-hmm. the gravestones and the portraits were really for lack of a better word, fun.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh man, that's crazy. That's really fun. And I don't know, I'm trying to think of like other movies where they have perspective of the ghosts.
Well, there's that new one that you've been talking about that we haven't seen yet.
Yeah. The one, it's called
something with an S.
It's done by Soderbergh.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm butchering his name.
But yeah, and that's supposed to be from the perspective of the ghost. I'm sure that we've seen some of them. Nothing really comes to mind now of films from the ghost's perspective.
Oh, it's called Presence.
Oh, Presence. There's an S in it.
It's in theaters last month.
Yeah. So, you know, this obviously would have been... you know, very like a popular film. Nicole Kidman is and has always been a big commercial draw.
Oh, yeah.
And then this, I feel like this was a point in her career where she did a lot of work. I feel like in the 2000s, like she was making a lot of films and mm-hmm. Across a variety of, you know, genres and you know, like different projects. And so I think that was probably like this film would have gotten a lot of attention. Just having her as the face of it.
Oh, it did. And, yeah. And then bonus. Well, I like her anyway. And then bonus that it was a creepy haunting movie.
Yeah.
And in the Moors. Or is Jersey Island the Moors? I don't know. It looked swampy.
Yeah.
It looked foggy and swampy, but I could be just like...
Yeah, I think that that's like a different... I think they probably have a different term for that. Because again, like the Moors are like the hills in, I would say, more inland.
Yeah.
You know? But like that swampy thing, which was the same as, you know, where the house was in Woman in Black, where it was like on an island in the middle of a bog. Yeah, so it definitely, like, it's a totally creepy setting. But it's interesting, though, because we've talked a lot about, like, the different eras of horror movies, and generally the movies that we saw coming out, the horror movies coming out in the 2000s, were not like this. You know, like, we associate, like, it was a big remake era.
Yeah, Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah, and Friday the 13th, and, like, you know, they all visually had, like, a very similar, like, look and style. Not to suggest that there weren't other types of horror movies being made in the 2000s, but when I think of horror movies from the 2000s, this isn't what I imagine.
Well, this is also kind of very pre-elevated horror in a way. Like,
yeah,
it just
seemed
like it made you think a lot. It had a lot of interesting twists. There's M. Night Shyamalan, and he was doing his thing, mm-hmm. and that was a big
Was Sixth Sense 99?
I want to say 96.
Okay, so it was a while before this.
I could be mistaken, though. But I remember being pretty young when I watched The Sixth Sense.
Yeah.
So at that point, we didn't have a lot of, like, interesting, like, oh, like, I didn't see that coming.
Rethinking.
Kind of.
Like, mm-hmm. let's bring new ideas or new creativity. Like, yeah, up until that point. I mean, obviously, there were movies like Silence of the Lambs. There were, like, you know, like, unusual, different, smart, well-done, scary movies. But the majority of them, you know, if it was a slasher, it went like this. If it was a ghost story, it went like this. If it, you know.
Right. You get a priest in.
Absolutely.
You know, I bought this estate. Here's a funny question, though, that I had mm-hmm. when I was watching this movie and our movie for next time. Mm-hmm. In this day and age, with our economy, how willing would you be to just live with ghosts?
Yeah.
If you bought a house.
Yeah, that's true.
We can't even afford houses. I'd be fine living with some ghosts.
Yeah, I feel like I would be fine living in a house where something terrible had happened.
Uh-huh.
But once the haunting started, I might be out of there, you know? But it's like, what I wonder is, like, historically, in so many horror movies rely on this, this, like, plot feature of you move into a house with a bunch of old shit still in it, right?
Yeah.
And so, like, even, like, The Conjuring mm-hmm. with, like, all the shit in the basement, or there's always, like, an attic full of crap. And this, you go, like, okay, this is an enormous estate home. Like, obviously, you're going to buy it furnished.
Yeah.
That it would have personal belongings still in it from people that you have no idea who they are,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so, like, the house in Cabin in the Woods, like, obviously that was designed purposefully
yes.
that way. But just the idea that the reason that worked in Cabin in the Woods and served that purpose was because that's such a trope mm-hmm. of, like, going into the old house and just discovering, you know, amongst the items that were left behind. And that's how the movie's able to tell the story
mm-hmm.
And how exposition happens of whatever terrible thing occurred in the house or whatever terrible thing is affecting the living that are in it now.
Yeah.
But just this, because nowadays the idea that you'd, like, move into a house and it would still have a bunch of someone else's shit in it, like, that doesn't happen, you know?
No. Sometimes I hear, like, on My Favorite Murder, someone's like, oh, I was doing construction, moving a wall or something, we found this stuff in the wall.
And yeah, like inside the wall, okay, maybe.
It's weird stuff. I'm like, ooh, that's crazy. I want to hear about it.
But, like, usually, like, before you close escrow, like, one of the things, like, it's empty, like, right? Mm-hmm. It's empty. It doesn't still have boxes of, you know, documents and photos and journals of dead people in the attic. God. Or haunted dolls.
Oh, I want that.
Or possessed wedding dresses on mannequins.
Can I have that?
Yeah, sorry. And maybe that would be an appealing way to list a house these days and be like, you know what? It's a real fixer-upper, but it's got an attic full of crap.
Blood orphans.
There's 100% one of those little organ grinder monkeys with the symbols.
I'm like, yes. I want to see that movie. Yeah. I'm so excited to see that.
Yeah.
But anyway, I digress. I think most people, elder millennials, we'd be like, yeah, it's fine. We'll just live in the house.
Just live in a spooky house. Well, and yeah, especially, like, you know, evaluate who the ghosts are. Are they the ghosts of some little kids? Who cares then? Are they ghosts of is it Chucky? Like, is it the ghost of a serial killer? Then maybe problematic.
Statistically, you know. No,
most people that die are not serial killers.
Right. And we're getting to the point where our country is so old now, you know, that
it's finally getting to be old compared to.
Well, I'm saying most homes or places have a place where you would, you know, somebody has died there. Something has happened there. And
do you think that's true of this house that you live in?
I'm like, oh, I don't know. Probably someone died here.
Really?
I don't know. Probably.
What year was it built, do you know?
It's been around since the 40s, maybe. But it was really done.
Okay.
Because they had a lot of ranchers and stuff back in those days. So.
Okay.
I don't know. Probably.
Be interesting to research.
Somebody died at one point on this property, you know, and they're of old age or whatever.
But yeah, but that's the thing. Yeah. Like, that a ghost, like a haunting doesn't occur usually unless there's, like, a trauma.
No.
Right? Like, people that die of natural causes, you know, like, why would their ghost hang around?
Well, sometimes they're just like, I just like the view. I just like
the Taco Bell cantina. It's the most beautiful Taco Bell in the world.
I like this spot. I was listening to this podcast yesterday, actually, and it was called, it's called Scary, no, I don't remember, something. Scary.
Presence.
Scary show.
The podcast about scary shit. Right.
Scare You to Sleep.
Okay. Oh, you've talked about that before, yeah.
Yes. So I was listening to it, and they have people write in different stories, and she reads them, and she has a very, like, soothing kind of voice. Mm-hmm. And sometimes she does, like, dark Reddit stuff, like weird Reddit threads.
Yeah, yeah.
And sometimes it's, like, people write in with true scary stuff that happened to them. Mm-hmm. And one was, like, talking about their childhood and how her parents always saw a person, like, kind of, like, from their bathroom would always see, like, a figure kind of looking out the window. Mm-hmm. And they're, like, the dad was very, like, he was, like, a scientist. He didn't even mention it, didn't say anything for a long time. And finally, he's like, I feel like I keep seeing somebody out of the corner of my eye, like, looking out the window, always in this one spot in our room. And then they found out later, like, a neighbor had, you know, been there forever. And their dad owned the home prior to them moving in. And he was like, well, he was housebound. And he really enjoyed looking at their, I don't want to say, it was like a beautiful tree outside. And that was always where he had to have his legs removed. So for some reason, he had like severe diabetic or whatever. Mm-hmm. And he couldn't really leave the home. So he would always be perched there and sit there. And that's kind of where they saw the entity or whatever, something. Mm-hmm. But it was not necessarily like malevolent. It was just like, they were just there.
It was just there, yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, I'd be fine with that.
Yeah, you know, that's something you could live with.
Sure.
Yeah.
If you just want to look at your backyard all the whole,
I love
in the
trees.
Afterlife.
I'm a tree fan.
Yeah.
I could see myself doing that in the afterlife.
Mm-hmm. I'm like, if I can just get a home, I would just, I'd be, you know, like, you guys chill out. Don't scare my children. Mm-hmm. And
maybe look at it as an opportunity to try and knock a couple a couple hundred thousand off the sale price.
I would say it's an advantage. I would
Yeah, but they don't have to know that. You make it sound like you're doing them a favor.
I'm like, ooh, yuck.
Yes.
I don't want that.
You're going to have a real hard time selling this house once I tell everybody it's haunted.
I definitely don't want a haunting in my house.
No way.
And zero witches.
I don't want to find anything in a wall.
No poltergeists or spooky stuff. Okay, I've gone way off topic.
That's okay.
Well, we were talking about haunted houses and the others and estates. And that mother was just being too knee-jerky about leaving that home.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of a one-of-a-kind home. You don't just walk away from that.
Yeah. Anyway, it was probably, you know, $20 back then, especially after the war. Yeah. So,
and so actually that haunted house element kind of plays into our next movie, which for next time we're doing Demonic.
Yep, 2015.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm glad you knew that. I was going to guess 2017. 2015, Demonic. And yeah, so check that out.
Yeah, fun discussion. We didn't have a lot to say about the movie,
but
if we talk about hauntings and houses and ghosts.
It's a horror movie podcast.
All right, bye.
Bye.